You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Phil Giraldi, a former CIA officer and the executive director for the Council for the National Interest. Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Phil, we've spoke several times before, and of course I know this, but for the benefit of listeners, before we get into this article that you wrote for the American Conservative magazine online, A Necessary Reckoning with Torture, based on, of course, the Constitution Project's almost 600-page report on detainee treatment. Before we do that, for the benefit of listeners, just give them a little bit of background about who you are, what you did in the CIA, what you do now, and your position at the Council for the National Interest, and what they actually are.
Yeah, okay. I was CIA operations officer. That means I was one of the CIA people that served overseas for 17 years. I served primarily in Europe and the Middle East during that time and worked on counterterrorism. I am currently the executive director of the Council for the National Interest, which is an advocacy group working to create a more sensible foreign policy, most particularly in the Middle East. So we focus very much on Middle Eastern issues and try to make the American public more aware of the issues that actually are at stake and the damage that is done to the United States by having a policy that is not proportionate.
Okay. And of course, most of the listeners are aware of who might be or what entity might be primarily responsible for that in the Middle East, and that would be the State of Israel, right?
Yeah, that would be correct. I mean, obviously, we have a situation where Israel is extremely powerful and supported by the most powerful nation in the world and basically has created its own reality in the Middle East. And this reality has not been a situation that's been good for United States interests.
Let's talk about this article you wrote in the American Conservative magazine on the AmericanConservative.com website, A Necessary Reckoning with Torture, the Constitution Project's report on detainee treatment is but a first step toward the truth and reclaiming our national honor. The Constitution Project, as I found out, is a nonprofit think tank, of course, here in the United States, and it tries to build bipartisan consensus on significant constitutional and legal questions. And they came out with this huge, like I said, I think it was 577-page report on how the detainees have been treated since 9/11. And I just want to read a little bit before I can pass it over to you, but where you say in your article, much of the world continues to regard the post-9/11 U.S. as a rogue nation because the so-called global war on terror, coupled with the Bush Doctrine, sent a clear message that Washington would intervene in other countries as necessary if it felt in any way threatened. And a new report by the Washington, D.C.-based Constitution Project's Task Force on Detainee Treatment just appeared about 2 weeks ago, and you say that it should once and for all end the largely partisan debate about whether the United States engaged in torture as part of its counterterrorism effort. Now, I did read the whole article, and I went through certain parts that I highlighted, and I just want to mention them. You say here that the meticulously documented 577-page report, and that's huge. Did you read the whole thing, Phil?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which took 2 years to prepare, was the work of an 11-strong, nonpartisan panel that included a broad range of contributors drawn from top levels of government and the private sector. Its co-chair was a former senior official from the Bush administration, Asa Hutchinson, who served both in Congress and at the Department of Homeland Security. Former George H.W. Bush U.N. Ambassador Thomas Pickering also was on the task force. The stated purpose of the inquiry was first to determine what is known and what may still be unknown about the past and current treatment of suspected terrorists detained by the U.S. government during the Clinton, Bush, and Obama administrations. This was accomplished through more than 100 interviews and review of public record information without having access to classified information. The panel then drew conclusions and recommended remedial action based on what was learned. The suggested responses to the development of the torture regime seek to establish a firm legal and institutional basis whereby no White House will ever again be tempted to resort to extraordinary measures in time of national emergency. The report says that it notes that Bush loyalists and CIA apparatchiks who persist in arguing that torture is effective might also consider the classified 6,000-page Senate Intelligence Committee report, which used government records to examine in detail every interrogation carried out by the agency. It reportedly agreed with the Constitution Project Task Force, concluding that torture never produced any information that could not have been obtained by less coercive means. That's absolutely correct, right, Phil?
Yes, it is. I mean, it seems that this has been looked at from a number of directions by a number of people from all angles of the political equation. So it's not exactly like this is a partisan judgment. And the Senate committee, which has both Republicans and Democrats on it, could not find any evidence of torture ever being actually useful in terms of stopping a terrorist act or obtaining information that led to the arrest of a terrorist. And the Constitution Project came to the same conclusion from a different direction. They were interviewing actual guards and prisoners, people that were detained as a result of these policies, and they also went through all the publicly available information, of which there is, of course, quite a bit. So the undeniable conclusion is that torture is not effective.
I guess if you saw that movie Zero Dark Thirty, you wouldn't believe that, right?
Zero Dark Thirty, unfortunately, not a bad movie, although it had some very silly things in it, gave the impression that torture was instrumental in eventually leading to the killing of bin Laden. So that is not true, it's not correct, and unfortunately more people see the movie than read the Constitution Project report.
Yeah. I wonder, besides yourself, how many people actually read the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but there are shortened versions of it floating around. There's an executive summary that's part of it, which you should read if you don't have time to read the whole report.
Now, here's the sad part of all this, because when I read this in your article, the report describes in detail how some prisoners were tortured to death or died under mysterious circumstances. Others were chained to walls or hung from ceilings. Some were restrained and placed in unchanged diapers for days at a time, forcing the prisoner to soil himself repeatedly for the duration of his interrogation, placing suspects in stress positions for hours or days, the use of guard dogs to terrify, enforced nakedness, exposure to cold and heat, and sleep deprivation were routine. Besides being completely revolted by this and saddened by it, one of the things that crossed my mind was that, are we in America anymore, Phil?
Yeah, of course, that's the big question. The first issue that the report tried to address was the very nature of torture. And what it did, and this was very clever, it basically went through U.S. government documents going back 50 years and more, and even to the Second World War with the Nuremberg trials, where the U.S. government took positions on what occurred in other countries and that it defined as torture. I think you're probably aware that a number of Japanese officers were executed by the Allies after the Second World War for engaging in waterboarding.
Right.
So there is a long tradition of the U.S. government itself saying to other governments that when you engage in this practice, we consider it torture. The ultimate irony on this was that the Bush administration was simultaneously engaging in torture and criticizing other countries like Sudan for engaging in similar practices. It was kind of the ultimate in hypocrisy that we were engaging in something that we were criticizing when other people did it. What the Constitution Project wound up doing, obviously, is proving that all of these enhanced interrogation techniques that the Bushies engaged in were, as defined by the U.S. government, absolutely torture, no question about it.
And you pointed out that this wasn't really started under Bush. Clinton had a hand in it, and it went to Bush, obviously got worse, and then it was handed down to the current president, I guess we can call him, which seems to have lost a lot of its cachet and meaning, at least as far as I'm concerned. But now with Obama, you say here that, and this is, of course, Obama, the hope and change president, Obama also failed to bring transparency and closure to the illegal activity by refusing in 2009, so we're going back here another 4 years, 4 years ago, to go after those who ordered and carried out the torture, in spite of the fact that Washington is a signatory to the International Convention Against Torture, which requires prompt investigation of all such allegations. Obama claimed that he wanted to look forward rather than back, and to be sure, he would have faced intense Republican resistance if he had proceeded, but he has since stonewalled on any accountability by repeatedly citing the state secrets privilege to halt legal proceedings or attempts by victims of the torture to obtain redress. The White House has also reneged on pre-election pledges to close Guantanamo Prison, where suspects continue to be held indefinitely and illegally without any charges, and a large-scale hunger strike currently underway is being dealt with through forced feeding, which the task force considers to be a form of torture. The report concludes that Obama's refusal to address the treatment of detainees generally, quote, cannot continue to be justified on the basis of national security, close quote. I want to ask you a couple of things about this, Phil. First of all, a lot of people were duped by Obama's first election promises and the whole hope and change thing. I think many people have woken up and have begun to see that, you know, this guy is just, he works for, you know, the big money and whoever it is that buys him and tells him what to do, because his words sounded great. Why would Obama find it necessary to ignore his promises? Wouldn't it be just as easy if he would have just said, you know what, let's clean up America. Let's bring it back to what it was. What are the forces behind Obama making this decision?
Well, I think it was a fight he didn't want to fight. That's really what it comes down to. He knew that if he really engaged on this issue in a serious way, that there would be a lot of mud thrown and most of it would have stuck on people that were in the George W. Bush administration. So it was a political issue in a sense. So I think he just decided to walk away from it. Now, the unfortunate result of that is there was no accountability, and he could have done something like had what the South Africans did, a truth commission to look at what was done in the name of the American people, just to make sure that everybody was on the same page in terms of exactly how the situation played out. But he didn't do that. I mean, he could have had a commission like that and then pardoned George Bush and Dick Cheney and all these other perpetrators, saying, look, it's not a question of punishing anybody. There was a terrorist attack, but we have to know the truth if we're ever going to move forward. And we have to make sure that we put in place legal features primarily to make sure that this never happens again. But he didn't do any of that.
You also mentioned the article, Phil, that for once the media was paying attention. You have Washington Post, New York Times, articles, editorials, op-eds, blogs, also the Los Angeles Times. Why do you think it is that all of a sudden the mainstream media, who usually moves in lockstep, why do you think it is that they, well, I mean, they all decided at the same time, which is usually what they do in lockstep. Why do you think it is that all of a sudden they decide to say, hey, we're the media. Yeah, this was torture. Why are they paying attention to it now?
I don't really have a good answer to that. It seems to me that the report was just so serious and so credible, and it was clearly nonpartisan, that they paid attention to it. There must have been someone making an editorial decision somewhere in the food chain who decided that this was really news. And of course, it was really news. It should be really news. And every American should have it as required reading, even 577 pages of it. But the fact is that the story has died since then. There's been no follow-up on it. There were calls to let's clear the air on this and so on and so forth, but the story has gone away. There's no constituency in the United States, apart from people like me and you, who are pushing for this kind of action to take place, and we don't count. It's essentially like a can of worms that Mr. Obama and whoever replaces Mr. Obama is never going to open. But I think it's significant that an effort was made here, and that for once we have seriously come to the conclusion, yes, the United States did carry out torture. And the other point the report makes is that this torture regime was authorized at the highest levels of the U.S. government, all the way up to the presidency, where this issue was discussed. It was clearly discussed, and a decision was made to torture people. So it's like this is something almost unbelievable in terms of maybe how when you and I were growing up, how we viewed the responsibilities of government and the seriousness of government. But this is what took place. We tortured people, and the government was fully aware of what it was doing and made a decision to do so. That is the importance of the report, and I think that may have caught the imagination of some people in the media.
I'm glad you explained that it died, because I was going to ask, has there been any follow-through? And obviously there hasn't. Have you done any interviews with anybody in the mainstream media or even anybody in the alternative media about this?
Yeah, alternative media, yeah. I've had a number of interviews, and they've all been fascinated by the story. But the mainstream, after, you know, its initial interest, has basically dropped it. But, you know, that probably is not too surprising to anyone.
No, absolutely not. And knowing what you know for all of your years in government and studying government and now reading this 577-page report and being able to digest that and digest the ramifications of it, do you hold out any hope that the United States can regain its previous higher ground, if we can even call it that, footing?
Well, I would look at it this way. I mean, the unfortunate reality of both the American public and probably the public in most countries is the memory span is about 30 seconds. So I think that people have forgotten a lot of this stuff already. They've forgotten that, if they ever really comprehended it, that the United States government behaved so badly in the aftermath of 9/11. So if the United States basically were to become a normal country again and stop killing people with drones and stop doing renditions and stop engaging in basically what amounts to terrorist activity around the world, then I think people would kind of forgive and forget. But I don't see that happening. We have a consensus, certainly within government, that all these activities are necessarily in place to protect us, which of course is nonsense. They're only making the world a more dangerous place. But the fact is that I can't see the U.S. government changing its basic groupthink on these issues. Republicans and Democrats, unfortunately, are too similar in terms of embracing this national security state. And I think that we're going to be seeing that for the foreseeable future.
Phil, what can listeners do, individuals do, to help to get articles like yours out there? Can they go to the Council for the National Interest and donate, or what's the best way for them to do this?
Well, we certainly always welcome donations. We're a small organization, and we're always kind of short on money. And we're one of a number of organizations that focus on specific issues. Now, people are really energized about the Middle East, and they feel, as I do, that the Middle East is the focal point of our foreign policy dilemma. Then we are a good organization to support. But I think that another thing to do is, it's kind of hopeless, but, you know, write to your newspapers and express your viewpoint on this issue. Call your congressman. I've been told reliably by people who work for congressmen that congressmen don't pay attention to anything until maybe they get 25 or 30 calls or 25 or 30 emails or letters. So there's a certain point where people, ordinary people, calling in or writing or contacting congressmen does have some impact. They might ignore you anyway, but the fact is they will actually pay attention to what's coming across their desk.
Yeah, I guess that's what they're ostensibly paid to do, right, Phil?
Well, we would hope they're paid to do that. They seem to have sold out to other interests by and large, but the fact is that they're supposed to do that.
Yeah. Did we hit on everything, or did we miss anything?
No, I think so. I think we discussed all the aspects of the story that were important. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff in there. I mean, there are appendices and everything that document everything that they're saying in incredible detail. That's why the report is so long. The main point is that, you know, torture took place. It was put into place by the U.S. government. There's been no accountability, and there have been no measures to make sure that it never happens again. So that's basically what it's all about.
Goodbye, America.
Right.
Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer and the executive director for the Council for the National Interest. Again, I want to thank you so much, Phil, for the time you took out to explain all this to the listeners. And thanks for doing what you do, and looking forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks very much.